By the third day of the trial, I knew he was guilty. Not because of the evidence was insulting. A partial footprint, a neighbor with cataracts, and a receipt from the petrol station that proved only that the defendant had once purchased gum like a man with poor impulse control. No, I knew he was guilty because he kept pretending to be frightened. Fear is difficult to fake. Most people overdo it. They tremble too much, blink too quickly, look at the floor as though innocence is written somewhere near their shoes. But real fear has weight. It slows you down. It makes the body economical. The defendant was performing fear for the jury. Unfortunately for him, the jury was eating it up. Jurors love emotion. They say they want facts, but that's only because facts make them feel responsible. Tears are easier. Tears give people permission to stop thinking. The woman beside me had already decided he was innocent because he reminded her of her son. Her son, apparently, had kind eyes. So did the defendant. So do deer. That does not make them innocent. The prosecutor stood up and adjusted his jacket. Bad sign. Men who adjust their jackets before questioning witnesses are trying to look confident because they are not. He approached the medical examiner with a stack of photographs and the grave expression of someone about to mishandle science. I settled back in my chair. This was going to be painful. The victim had been found in her kitchen, 29 years old, barefoot, one broken wine glass, no forced entry, a clean incision across the carotid artery. The prosecution wanted us to believe it was a sudden attack, a crime of passion. I nearly sighed out loud. Passion is loud. This was not loud. This was practiced. The cut was too clean, too controlled, too beautifully placed. Whoever killed her had known exactly where to open her. The prosecutor missed that. The defense missed it too, which offended me more. If you're going to defend a murderer, at least respect the murderer. The defendant folded his hands on the table, left thumb over right. He'd done that every time the blade was mentioned. Not the blood. Not the body. The blade. Attachment, then. Interesting. The knife had never been found. Amateur mistake by the police. Sentimental mistake by him. People keep things they should destroy. Letters, photographs, weapons, receipts. Never keep receipts. I realized I'd thought the sentence too sharply and glanced around, as though someone might have heard it. No one had. Of course not. That's the wonderful thing about a courtroom. Everyone is listening to the wrong person. The victim's sister testified after lunch. She cried before she sat down. Effective. Uncontrolled grief reads as honest, even when it isn't useful. She described her sister as kind, trusting, generous. All the things people become after death. No one is ever petty in an obituary. No one is controlling, vain, cruel, manipulative, or secretly pleased when a friend fails. Death edits character more effectively than time. The defendant looked at her while she spoke. Not too long, not too little. Someone had coached him. I wonder if he had paid well. I hope not. By 4 o'clock, the jury was tired. Tired jurors are dangerous. They stop examining details and start searching for emotional relief. Guilty, not guilty. Either will do if it means going home. Then the prosecutor made his worst mistake. He held up the photograph. The photograph. The victim on the kitchen floor, one arm extended, fingers curved slightly inward. A terrible image. A useful one. Gasped, moved through the jury box. The woman beside me whispered, "God." I leaned forward. Not because of the blood. Blood is rarely interesting once it stops moving. No. I was looking at the hand. The fingers. The angle of the wrist. There. Under the nail of her index finger. A crescent of dark material. Not skin. Not blood. Wax. The candle. There had been a candle in the crime scene photos. Blue wax, melted down one side, placed on the counter near the sink. The police had cataloged it as decor. Idiots. She had scratched the candle when she fell. No, not fell. Reached. Why reach for a candle while dying? Not for light, not for help. For something hidden beneath it. I almost smiled. Finally, something interesting. The photograph disappeared, and with it, apparently, the prosecution's only useful clue. I looked at the defendant. For the first time all day, he looked back. Only for a second, but he knew. Not that I had solved it. Not yet. Only that I had noticed something. His left thumb moved beneath his right. Small motion. Precise. Fear this time. Real fear. There you are. The judge dismissed us at 5. The others shuffled out whispering about dinner, traffic, childcare, the inconvenience of justice. I stayed seated a moment longer. The defendant was speaking with his attorney, nodding, composed again. But not enough. He glanced once toward the evidence table, toward the photograph. Toward the candle, no one understood. By tomorrow, I would know where the knife was. By the end of deliberations, I would know how he had done it. Whether I told anyone depended entirely on how bored I became. People assume justice is a moral obligation. It isn't. It's a system. And systems are only interesting when they fail. As I left the courtroom, the bailiff smiled. Long day? I smiled back. Not at all. Behind me, the defendant laughed softly at something his lawyer said, relaxing. Poor man. He thought the danger was 12 strangers deciding his fate. He hadn't realized one of them was taking notes.